Hello, Hyrule! Welcome to Season 3 of Hello, Hyrule, the premier Legend of Zelda Travelogue podcast. We are your tour guides. My name is Pete.
And my name is Chris. Hey, Pete.
What up? We're back.
It is good to hear you do that intro again.
Like, we built up a big backlog before we actually started recording this one.
We've been at it with bonus episodes for quite a while, so we're getting back into it. We're stretching our legs. We're getting cozy, and we are starting a brand new season of Hello Hyrule with Four Swords. Not Four Swords Adventures.
Correct.
A mistake that we will make throughout this season many times.
I don't know. I mean, like, we've talked about it enough times over the course of this that I don't know if it's really gonna...
I will make that mistake. I'm telling you right now. As sure as the sun comes up, I will make that mistake. It's also, like, weird. Anytime you Google Four Swords, the first 8 Google results are going to be Four Swords Adventures.
Oh, yeah.
And then you'll get like some message board post about Four Swords.
You know what? That is actually a little bit like vindicating after the fact, knowing what we're walking into right now.
So this is the travel brochure for Four Swords. This isn't like the standard Hello Hyrule episode. It being a travel brochure means we're going to go over a lot of the development stuff and a lot of the mechanical stuff. We get that stuff out of the way early so that we can focus on the actual locations and the story beats in each main episode after this.
Right.
And so with that out of the way, I guess let's jump right into it, right?
I mean, where do you start though, right?
You start at the beginning. The Legend of Zelda Four Swords is technically the 9th main installment in the Zelda series. It came out in a double pack on the Game Boy Advance with Link to the Past. So this release was called Link to the Past and Four Swords. So this was like a multiplayer mode complementing Link to the Past's release on the Game Boy Advance.
Right. That's how it started.
That's how it started. It was also the first ever multiplayer version of a Legend of Zelda game.
Just an experimental party game kind of thing.
Yeah. And it required at least 2, but up to 4 different Game Boy Advance systems that allowed people to play along with each other.
I'm so glad we outgrew that. Because Four Swords Adventures does that too, right? You need 4 different Game Boy Advances?
I mean, yeah. I guess, I don't know. I guess online was kind of a thing at this time, but really not as much on the console front.
This was like early Xbox Halo days, I think.
This was kind of, like, this game came out after Wind Waker.
Okay.
Right? So this would be like the GameCube, Xbox, PS2 era.
No one was really doing it well.
Yeah, like Xbox had online functionality. PS2 had some online functionality, but you needed to plug a thing into the back of the PS2.
Uh-huh. It was still LAN party days.
Yeah, you can't really expect Nintendo to have gotten on board that train at that point. The fact that they still kind of don't do online fantastic today in 2022 is maybe an interesting tidbit.
Tugging at my collar.
But you can't fault them for maybe not trying too hard with it back then. Anyway, this game was first shown off at E3 2002 by Shigeru Miyamoto. It came out in December of 2002 in North America, and then March 2003 in Japan and Europe. So this released after, like I said a second ago, after Wind Waker, and also this is a Capcom game that released after the Oracle games. Just development-wise. I'm not talking about the Zelda timeline right now.
Yeah, the last Capcom game was Minish Cap, right?
Minish Cap came out after this. From what I can see, Capcom did not do Four Swords Adventures. I think that was a Nintendo EAD joint. So Minish Cap came out in 2004, technically, right? So Minish Cap is a prequel to this game, and they built it knowing that. Four Swords came out, and then they built a prequel to it. Very consciously.
I mean, they definitely went out with a bang then, because I think Minish Cap might be the best of what they did. I don't know, actually, because I do love Oracle of Seasons a lot. Like, a lot, a lot.
Yeah, I think this was mostly supposed to be a thing that complemented Link to the Past on the Game Boy Advance. They wanted a fun little bonus.
Sure.
And to be fair, it did some cool things back and forth with Link to the Past. There are things you unlock in Four Swords that can transfer over into Link to the Past and vice versa. You can unlock some abilities by meeting certain criteria in each game, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
So Four Swords got a sequel in Four Swords Adventures in 2004. which we mentioned a second ago.
Mm-hmm.
They also, after that, fun fact, they were making a DS sequel to Four Swords, but this was canceled in favor of Phantom Hourglass.
Ooh, don't know how to feel about that.
I think that's probably the right call.
I don't know how a DS Four Swords would work out, like whether that'd be better or not.
I think if they're gonna revisit Four Swords, do it now with like the online infrastructure that they have on the Switch. I would love to sit on my couch and play online with like you and Lee, you know, from our different homes and do a Four Swords style game. I think the idea is novel and neat.
I've been saying this for like the past year now, like just port adventures. Just port Four Swords Adventures.
Sure, that would be a great idea.
With online functionality, that would, well, first off, that would solve a lot of problems you and I are going to have when we actually get to that game.
Yeah, that would be very convenient.
But mostly, like, they're making cute, kitschy little online games already. Like, you got Kirby's Gourmet Race, whatever that's called. You got, you know, Mario 32 that they canned for no reason.
Oh, right. Yeah, this would fit in with, like, one of those Nintendo Switch Online games that they throw out there every now and then. So all of that information was revolving around the game Four Swords. There was also a game, and this is the game specifically that we'll be speaking about, called Four Swords Anniversary.
Yep.
This was an update to Four Swords.
25th Anniversary Edition.
Exactly. It came out on the DSiWare as a free limited time only download for DSi and 3DS users between September of 2011 and February of 2012.
Wait, this came out the same year as Skyward Sword?
I think so.
Whoa. Okay, so after this game, we are breaching that point in time finally. We're not going to be hanging around the 25th anniversary anymore.
Right. This anniversary port was developed by a studio named Grezzo, and this port in particular not only contained the functionality to play this game in single player mode, which we will be speaking about extensively in just a minute, but it also contained two new areas in the form of the Realm of Memories, which we might speak about in this episode as well briefly, but it'll get its own episode later in the season.
It's the Realm of Memories and also, what, the Hero's Trial?
From what I was able to see, and full disclosure, I'm not done with this game yet, but the Hero's Trial I thought was just like a hero mode version of the game, just a harder difficulty.
Nope.
Okay, so yeah, the Realm of Memories and the Hero's Trial were added to the game. As well as a few other changes made for the fact that this is a single player adventure now, or it's able to be a single player adventure.
Oh, is it though? We're going to be talking about this on and off throughout the season. This is going to be a short season, but like we were joking about this right before we started the recording. Playing Four Swords Anniversary Edition in single player and also wanting to like 100% that is like playing 50 rounds of Mario Party alone.
Yeah, it's an apt comparison. The game ramps up difficulty. So they made some smart choices, and again, we'll talk about them in a minute, to make this into a form that is able to be played in a single player fashion.
Uh-huh.
But they didn't rebalance the difficulty.
Nope. We'll get there, but it's...
Yeah, we'll get there. So let's talk about the actual developers on this project. We got our boy Hidemaro Fujibayashi, who worked on the Oracle games, worked on Minish Cap, worked on Four Swords, Skyward Sword, Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom, Age of Calamity. This is our guy.
Yeah. This is our boy.
He directed this game as well. Aside from Hidemaro, we also got Yuko Takahara, who was the sound composer. She also worked on the Aladdin SNES games, the Mega Man X games on SNES, and some Marvel vs. Capcom stuff, as well as a bunch of JoJo games.
Wait, really? Mm-hmm. I was happy enough hearing about Aladdin and the Mega Man X games. Those are all great.
Yeah, they are. Also, Koji Kondo was an advisor for the sound of this game. So, you know, he's around still, which is always good.
He stepped a foot in the door every now and then, maybe by accident.
So, I don't know. That's pretty much what I have in regards to the history behind this game. I know it's not a lot, but like Pete was kind of getting at earlier, this game isn't really a full-fledged Legend of Zelda game.
Mm-hmm.
This game is kind of a side game that came out with another release But it just so happens to continue this important storyline of Vati, so we do want to make some time to talk about it.
You know what, actually, Chris? You know what caliber of game Four Swords Anniversary is?
Please tell me.
It is, like, along the same lines as Link's Crossbow Training.
Sure.
Where, like, it is tangential, mostly. Like, I mean, especially if you're talking about Crossbow Training, where the plot is basically non-existent. It has nothing to do with Twilight Princess. It's just like a filler episode in anime terms.
Listen, Pete, if you're trying to convince me that we need to do an episode about Link's Crossbow Training at some point, I'm on board.
We can do a bonus. I'm down for that.
Yeah. Also, Tingle's Rupi Rosie Land. Why not? Let's get
that's
that
in there.
That's a
tough one. That is a challenging concept. Because I have played that, Chris, and I don't know if it really fits in.
But the thing is those games aren't on the timeline. Like, this game is specifically on the timeline at this point.
Right. And it's, I feel like it's the only reason it's counted on the timeline is because it has something resembling a plot. Okay.
It does. To its credit, things happen. There is a beginning, middle, and end of a story here.
It has elements and characters that other games don't have, and therefore it's its own unique entity, which makes this whole thing even stranger.
It is. It's very strange. If it sounds like Pete and I are coming down hard on this game, we both have a list of criticisms for it, but there are also some cool things about it that we are both excited to talk about.
Yep.
Anyway, let's get into some of those things now and talk about the mechanics.
I mean, without getting into the actual plot that drives us towards these mechanics, because we'll save that for the next episode.
Yes, we will go over the story in the next episode.
So essentially, you start the game with three primary levels that you go to with your friends, if you are presumably playing with your friends.
Pete and I were playing alone, so the anniversary single player mode allows you to control, you know, Link Alpha, Green Tunic Link, plus one additional clone of Link.
Whose color you do get to choose. And
which is good.
It's a nice addition.
Good start.
And this other, you know, non-Link that you have with you, you can swap, you know, back and forth between them, so you have a little bit of control.
Yes, there's a button to control Link number one and a button to control Link number two, and you could swap at the push of a button, which is kind of a cool idea. It works pretty well, I think.
Link number one and Link number two, or as they were called in my game, Curtis and Blurtis, because I went with the blue Link the entire time.
So I guess mine was Odang and Rodang. Oh, by the way, I don't know if I shared this with you or the internet at large, but when I replayed the Minish Cap for our Swordies episode, I named my Link Odang. So I have a canonical Odang story going in my head right now.
I mean, that works for me. I typically only just call Link Link. But if we continue to make each other name our Links weird things, then, you know, we'll see how that goes.
I would never, on my first playthrough of a Zelda game, not name my character Link. But yeah, anything goes on revisits. So yeah, as Pete said, you control some amount of Links, and we have a map screen in this game. We have a static map that we choose a location from.
Yeah, that's a little weird.
For a Zelda game, it is. Basically, you choose one of three locations at the start. A fourth or fifth one may open up later.
Mm-hmm. Come on. We've already talked about, like, special bonus stuff.
And basically, like, the levels in this game are less of an open, coherent world like most Zelda games, and they're more of a get from point A to point B.
Right. Very linear.
Yeah, very linear. Kind of think of them as dungeons, right? Yeah. Like, you're kind of just bouncing from a dungeon to a dungeon.
You could take it that way.
It's just puzzle after puzzle after puzzle. Mm-hmm. You're not visiting any towns. There's no in-between areas.
Yeah.
It's pretty much enemies and dungeons the whole way through.
Right. And almost no characters that you talk to. I think it's just fairies. You only talk to fairies in this game.
You talk to the stray fairies. I know we're going to get to that next episode. But it was cool to see those little buggers come back.
Cool and confusing, Chris.
Very confusing. I imagine we will have a bit of a tangent next episode.
But in any case, I think it's fair to say that the levels are kind of like dungeons. I think that fits. Although, like, most of the time in these levels you're going to be going to, what you're going to encounter are just big old square maps with different interchangeable chunks of dungeon loaded inside of it. Mm-hmm. Like, you can go back and forth this level over and over, and like, you might find the same level but with different pieces in it.
So that's kind of the cool thing about this game. It was built with some amount of replayability in mind. We'll talk about that, how that fits mechanically, in a second.
Yeah,
but every time you jump into one of these levels, it consists of two gameplay segments and then a boss, and the two gameplay segments are randomized.
Yes,
so every time you play the level, it will be a little bit different.
I do think it's kind of neat how they found a way to like load in different chunks.
And the game does have puzzles. Like, it's not just fighting. It's not just mindless
fighting.
There's
puzzles. There's actually stuff that you can encounter. I mean, which it's weird to encounter in single player, but there's parts you can encounter that are clearly meant to be a race between all the players. So it's just you and Blurtus running up and down like this one area, like alone, and you're going to get there first. Chances are you're not playing as Blurtus, and you're going to get the chest at the end that has the biggest amount of rupees. And then you can just open everyone else's chest with a gradually diminishing amount of rupees.
Yeah, I forgot about that for a second. That is a good point. There are a lot of competitive elements to this game, which can be pretty strange if you're playing by yourself.
I do think this is not a complaint, mind you, but I do feel like I would have had a lot more fun playing this game with other people.
Oh, I wish we could have played this together, but
this isn't like an adventure game that you'd expect from Zelda. This is a party game.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I think it would be very cool as a party game. Like, let's be very clear about this. We had our criticisms about the cloning elements in the Minish Cap. Mm-hmm. The multiple links in Four Swords is actually kind of a fun and cool gameplay conceit.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
You're not immediately disappearing when you get hit. You know what I mean? Like each one can kind of hold their own. Both Links can like have different weapons equipped, and you can like smack swords together to create a fire and light a torch.
Oh, I forgot all about that, Chris. I got so frustrated at one point, but we can get to that later.
Sure, but it's generally a kind of cool idea on paper.
On that note though, I'm glad you bring up that the different Links can have different weapons, because there's no inventory system in this. It's just you, your sword, and one other item that it becomes interchangeable with, like different tools.
Yeah,
like you can have your shield, or you can have your bow, or you can have the rocks cape from Minish Cap, or you can have a big magnet.
Yeah, it's definitely a big departure from the series. We're not going to go over every individual item this episode, because I think that makes sense next episode.
Yeah, that's next time.
It's interesting. So you have the multiple Links. Each Link can hold a different item.
Yeah.
So you can kind of pick and choose.
You kind of have to at points.
Yeah. So it's like a little bit of a risk reward. Like, do I want to drop, you know, the shield for the magnet or this or that? Generally, the game seems to not screw you over in that department. Like, if they give you an item, chances are you're going to have to use it coming up.
There are a couple times where you're going to have to make some choices, but it's far and few between.
You can also get like power-ups for your guy.
Oh, the seeds.
Yeah, you can seeds, and it boosts your attack, it boosts your defense, and I think it boosts your speed.
I don't know if it works. I don't know exactly how it works when you're playing with multiple people, but when you get the seeds in single player, both you and your second get the upgrade at the same time,
which is another new concept for this game.
True.
And they each last for the duration of the level. It's not a permanent buff
of the dungeon. Yeah.
So that's kind of a cool little fun thing.
You know, I genuinely would like to see them revisit this. Like, it's got potential still.
Yes, like I said earlier, I think if they built this thinking about the online structure that they have in place now, they could do something pretty cool with
it. You can do it, Nintendo. There's still time.
Let's take a step back and talk about the main objective of these levels. And what I mean by that is, let's talk about rupees in Four Swords.
Yeah, let's do that, huh?
You always have to be collecting rupees in Four Swords.
Always be earning.
I mean, that sounds like, oh, it's a Zelda game. Of course you want to get rupees. But like, there's always kind of a push and pull with rupees in these games where like, you get them to a point, then you want to spend them so you can get a bigger wallet or you can get items. This one, you just always want to be amassing rupees.
And the reason for that is twofold, Chris, because like, one, it's a party game, and at the end of each level, you actually get ranked up in between your other players. So like, this one got the most rupees and they win, you know what I mean? The other reason is that at the end of each level, the total amount of rupees that you and your friends collected gets weighed against, like, well, it depends on what point of the game you're at, how much you need. But if you gather enough in each level, then you can unlock later levels.
Yeah, so let's talk about the general structure. Essentially, we're proving ourselves to great fairies by collecting rupees, which is the judgment that Pete is referring to.
We can save this. When we talk about plot, we'll talk about it in greater detail. But
yes,
these are the great fairies from Minish Cap.
Yeah, I guess so. I didn't really think about that, but yeah.
It's the same sprites. They go by different names, mind you. Mm-hmm.
And at the end of each level in Four Swords Anniversaries, all of these kind of go into a pool at the end of each level, right? So you're collecting and earning in this greater pool.
Right.
When you die in this game, your revival costs rupees?
Yes, an increasing amount of rupees, depending on how many times you die.
Right. So, like, you don't have to worry about going back or continues or anything, but they will take away some rupees. And like Pete mentioned a second ago, the larger goal of this game is going to be hit a certain amount of rupees
right
at a certain point. So you kind of don't want to do that.
You have a daily quota with the fairies.
Yeah.
And this, like, proves that you're here. I want to talk about it so bad.
We'll get to it. Also, time plays a factor in the amount of rupees you get at the end of a level.
Oh, right. If you're quick enough, you get a bonus.
Right. So you're encouraged to go quick, but you also kind of want to go and get the rupees throughout the level. So it's like a balance between, or it's like a judgment call, I guess. Do you want to just speed run the level, or do you want to, you know, if you think about like Super Mario World, when you collect all those coins for a bonus at the end, like the big coins or whatever.
If you're playing single player, you kind of have to uncover the entire level.
Yeah. So there are, like I mentioned a second ago, these large rupees called rupee shards. And if you collect four of them throughout any given level, you get 500 rupees from the fairies at the end.
Well, you don't get those extra rupees at the end. You get those extra rupees right away. But the rupee shards, it's just four yellow rupee shards. You might find one per run. I think maybe only one time I've actually collected all four.
Oh, really? I think I did once or twice, yeah.
This game, that we're getting to my biggest gripe with this game, okay? And this is not like a huge thing overall, but hear me out. Succeeding in this game depends on RNG. The amount of rupees you'll find in a level is completely random. You can play a level and get all the way to the end and get a certain total of rupees. But if you hit retry on the menu and start the same level over, just refreshing it, the amount of rupees will be different.
Yeah.
So when you're trying to meet a specific threshold to continue playing the game and the game does not give it to you.
Which, to be clear, your first run through of the game, that's not going to be a problem.
Not really.
I didn't really hit that problem going through the first epic.
Ah, you said the magic word, Chris.
Let's hold off on that for just a minute. Let's get through the rupee discussion before we get to that. So yeah. There's also something called rupee fever, which I don't think you or I ever encountered, did we?
What is that?
So rupee fever, it was a part of the original release. If it's in Four Swords Anniversary at all, it's only in the multiplayer, which might be why neither of us have seen it.
Okay.
Rupee fever gets activated as long as you have full hearts. I think, like, I don't know what triggers it, but basically for a period of time, it doubles all the rupees you pick up.
No.
Yeah.
Oh, that would have saved me so much trouble.
Yeah.
I'm so mad.
Tell me about it. There's a lot of fevers you don't want to get. Rupee fever? You want to get rupee fever.
I'm too healthy. I couldn't catch it.
Let's talk about the three epics. So the first time that you play through the Four Swords, the players are going to struggle through the first three levels, earning silver keys that will allow you to essentially complete the game.
Right.
After you complete the game the first time, there's the option to go back through it two more times.
Yep.
Each time you do it, you're going to get a different ending. And to fully beat this game, you want to play through all three of these times.
Do you really get a different ending? I've gotten through two epics so far, and I don't recall there being a different ending.
It's possible. We'll have this information as we continue through the season.
That's what I mean. If I make it through the third, who knows?
All right. So the first epic, I have some notes on the first epic here. First time you go through it, the team needs to collect a total of 1,000 rupees per stage.
Chump change.
In order to get silver keys and open the path to Vati's palace. The silver door level for the Realm of Memories is a special level added to the anniversary port that is themed around A Link to the Past, which is kind of cool.
Well, here's the thing about that. That is one, very cool, that the three different doors in the Realm of Memories are based on three different Zelda games, which is just super sweet. I love it.
And it takes their art styles. It kind of adapts the game into their art styles.
I was so excited around the second time around. I think it was the gold door. But anyway, the point I'm trying to get at, for the Realm of Memories, it does have three different doors the way that Vati's Palace does, with the gold, silver door, gold door, and the hero door. What's the third door called?
Hero keys.
The hero keys?
Yeah.
You don't need keys to play the different levels of Realm of Memories. Like, you beat the game once, you get credits once, and you unlock Realm of Memories.
Oh, okay.
But once you have it, you can just play level one, level two, level three, back to back.
Oh, very cool. Okay. So yeah, the second epic stages are even harder, and you have the silver keys. You're trying to earn 3,000 rupees to receive gold keys.
Kind of tough, not too bad.
Yeah. And these levels, when you get to the Realm of Memories, are based around Link's Awakening.
Yeah, I thought that was so cool, because I'm actually in the middle of playing Link's Awakening for the first time.
Me too. Well, I'm playing the remake for the first time. I've played the original.
Oh, are you?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I'm playing the OG on the 3DS.
Very cool.
But I just thought that was so surprising to end up in like the Game Boy Color style.
Yeah, and when I learned about that, you know, my brain was trying to make some connection based on what we said in the final episode of the Minish Cap season in regards to the nightmare taking the form of Vati at the end of that game. So I was thinking, oh, well, is he aware of himself because of the Realm of Memories, this or that? I don't think there's actually a connection there. All of these games, like Link's Awakening, Link to the Past, and Legend of Zelda OG, all occur in the timeline after Four Swords. Yeah. So it's a bit of a stretch.
It's the realm of future memories, of things that haven't happened yet.
Yes, future memories. And as I hinted at, the final epic, you get hero keys, you need 5,000 rupees per stage.
Garbage.
And you get levels themed around The Legend of Zelda 1.
Impossible. Impossible to play this game single player and get 5,000 rupees. I got it in just one level, and it took me like 100 tries. That's an exaggeration, but it took a lot of tries.
It's a lot. You're not the only person who has struggled with that. I've seen people online having a tough time.
Like, it gets to a point where it's like, I kind of understand why they don't make this version of the game available. Like, this was a limited edition, like, thing you could just download on the DS.
Yeah. The cool thing, completing the Realm of Memories unlocks the Master Sword in the game.
Wait, really?
Yeah.
Oh. Well, that's pretty cool.
You got a little sprite change. I don't know if it functionally is different. I will report back if it's functionally different.
Just kind of hoping.
It might be. It might be. I can't say for sure.
There are certain enemies that I would like to kill a little faster.
I believe it. But yeah, I don't know. I hope that wasn't too discombobulated, but I think generally speaking, we went over the high-level mechanics there.
If our explanation of the game, like, sounds discombobulated, then that is because this game is discombobulated.
Yes, but again, it's not all bad. I know we've been kind of nitpicking on it. It's
not bad.
There are some cool things. I can't really understate. It feels kind of good to play a Zelda game that is focused purely on puzzles.
Sure.
To just be able to move forward without having to worry about, like, oh, I have to go back in town and possibly trade a thing or talk to this person or buy a new item. Mm-hmm. Like, this game is all just forward progress. And in some ways, that's kind of cool and refreshing.
Yeah, I don't know. Because you mentioned, like, a focus on puzzles. I'd say there's definitely a bigger focus on combat than puzzles.
Yeah, there certainly is. Yeah, there's some puzzles, though.
Unless you count those, like, moments where there's, like, a bouncy ball that you have to, like, shoot into a goal to get rupees.
I can't wait to talk about the bouncy balls. Pete, I didn't know that you could swing the sword to hit the bouncy balls. I thought you had to soccer kick the bouncy balls into the goals.
What, like, nudge it slowly the whole time?
Pete, that's what I did for first time that you come across the bouncy ball arena.
You need to do a mixture of both, I think.
Okay, well, we'll talk about that next episode when we first see them. That being said, I do want to say, just generally speaking, the items you get in this game are pretty interesting.
I mean, it's all items that you've had in previous games, right? There's nothing new. New to this show, I guess, but nothing new to the franchise.
I guess so.
It is the first instance of the Rock's cape, I think, rather than Rock's feather. But then you get like the magnet gloves, which is in the Oracle games.
Oh, the magnet gloves are in that game?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. So yeah, I was going to say, oh, you don't really get magnets until like, you know, Breath of the Wild.
No, there's been magnets long before that, Chris.
Yeah, I guess everything kind of existed previously, or a lot of things. It's just, again, those things working in this pure combat and puzzle form is interesting. It's a nice little, you know, side diversion, I guess, let's say.
We need to find a way to play Four Swords Adventures online when we get there.
I think we'll be able to figure something out by then. Anyway, that's going to do it. If this was your first Hello Hyrule episode, hello, welcome.
Congratulations.
Congratulations. We have two seasons. We have one on Skyward Sword, which both of us are super passionate about, and one on Minish Cap, another fantastic game. I hope you check those out. And every other Sunday, we'll have a new episode out about this game, Four Swords, until the end of 2023, which is, I think, around the time we'll be ready to start tackling Ocarina of Time.
Oh, brother, that is going to be a big challenge.
That's going to be an exciting challenge. I want to be very clear in this request also. You hear so many people who have different opinions on, oh, my favorite Zelda game is this or that. Uh-huh. If Four Swords, not Four Swords Adventures, if Four Swords is your favorite Zelda game, and I mean this with no amount of snark, please write in and talk to us. Like, oh, let us know. Tell us about your childhood playing this game, or tell us about what you love about this game.
There's got to be someone in the audience who has played it as a kid.
I'm sure many people have played it, but I don't think I've ever heard someone say, Four Swords is my favorite Zelda game. Because again, it's not a very conventional Zelda game. It's like a, it's a side game. It came to supplement Link to the Past.
Whose favorite Final Fantasy game is Crystal Chronicles? Nobody. I mean, most likely nobody.
Listen, if your favorite Final Fantasy game is Crystal Chronicles, here's your chance. Dunk on Pete. Send us an email.
You have to mean it, though. Don't lie just to dunk on me.
But yeah, I genuinely want to hear about people's experiences with Four Swords. We're only going to be covering this for about 5 episodes or so, so we don't have as much time. So get your opinions in to us. And Pete, if people want to write to us, where can they do that?
If you have any opinions on Four Swords, you can send us a postcard at HyrulePod@gmail.com or by dropping us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. We'll read your message here, and you'll be helping more listeners like you to find the show. Quick note, by the way, is typically we would read your postcards at the end of an episode. Since this is a brochure, we're going to hold off on that until next episode.
We're probably going to have a big postcard section that first episode because we already have a stack of emails.
Yeah, we got some catching up to do since the bonus episodes we had come out.
Mm-hmm.
In any case, you can also find the show on Twitter, Insta, and Tumblr at Hyrule Pod. If you want to reach out to me or Chris individually on Twitter, I am at the edge of my Pete.
And I am at a man named Babs.
B-A-B-S.
Right.
But that's going to do it for this brochure episode of Hello Hyrule. Thank you for listening. Next episode, we're starting off with the plot of Four Swords, as much plot as there is, and stepping into the Chambers of Insight.
And just a disclaimer, a reminder, because this is a weird week for us with the travel brochure, this isn't the only podcast we're releasing today. Mm-hmm. If you check your feed, you probably have a Rupersode, which is our outtakes for the Minish Cap season. Mm-hmm. As one of the two people who edited the Minish Cap season, I can tell you, if you listen to it, you're not going to want to miss the outtakes episode because some pretty dumb stuff was said that did not make the actual episode.
Well, I'm halfway through editing that. It's a banger, I gotta tell you. It's nice to have like a little tradition though of like brochure plus the Rupersode of the previous season.
Yeah, it's a week of non-traditional Hello Hyrule episodes because from here on out we're focusing on the locations.
But until then, I have been Pete.
And I have been, once again, Chris.
Excuse me, podcast.
I think that this helps us build a strong foundation for the season that's coming.
We're gonna need it.